Good morning. My name's Darren Murphy. I'd like to welcome you to the results briefing for the first half FY07 for Computershare Limited. I'd also like to welcome our recently appointed CEO, Mr. Stuart Crosby, and CFO, Mr. Tom Honan. It would be remiss of me not to send a cheerio to Mr. Chris Morris, who is in London listening as we speak. The order of proceedings for the call is as follows. We'll have an introduction from Stuart. We'll follow that with a review of the financials by Tom, and then we'll have a business update from Stuart to finish. This will be followed by question time. Just a reminder, star one to queue for a question. If you'd like to cancel and leave the queue, star two. We expect the briefing will last around 1 hour. I'll hand you over to Stuart Crosby.
Thank you, Darren, and good morning, everyone. Let me leap straight into it. We have today announced our results for the first half of financial year 2007, and we are frankly pretty thrilled by them. Our management earnings per share, which is our key internal performance measurement, is up 102% at $0.1786 per share. Net profit after outside equity interests is $107 million, which is up 104%. This is driven by revenues of $164 million, up 18%, and operating costs up 3% to $506.3 million. Importantly, free cash flows are up 153% at just short of $130 million. One of the key factors there is a reduction in our days sales outstanding to 45 days, down from 53 days at the similar time last year. We have announced an interim dividend of $0.08 a share, up from $0.07 as the final dividend last year. This result is driven from very satisfying performance across all our major business lines and across our geographical regions. Standouts are all of our major markets: the USA, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and a special mention for Hong Kong, where IPO activity has been very, very satisfying. Revenue growth is obviously a key part of the story, but margin growth is much more important. Margin has gone from 17% in the December half last year to 27% in the half we're reporting on here. Importantly, market cycles in both equity and interest rates remain favorable around the globe. We have included in the presentation a couple of slides that indicate the state of those two cycles, the equity market cycles and the interest rate cycles, over the next two slides, which I will not expand on at length, except to say that they continue to look encouraging, and we are assuming in running our business that they will continue at current levels going forward. As we look to explain our current situation, it's worth reminding ourselves of Computershare's significant strengths. We have a very high level of recurring revenue in our revenue line. More than 70% is really quite predictable. We offer global diversification with activities in 17 markets and, importantly, with presences in a number of the markets that everyone looks to for growth in the global economy going forward in China, India, and Russia. We offer exposure to Northern Hemisphere interest rates, and as Tom gets into the detail, you will see some of the impact of that. Our technology capacities and business integration capacities, we believe, are demonstrated by what we've done over the last couple of years, and we see our growth in earnings per share as being a really important part of Computershare's investment story. Looking forward, in the light of the excellent first half result and the continuation of favorable equity and interest rate market conditions, we expect to report annual earnings numbers reflected in management earnings per share, approximately 50% higher than last year. any guidance beyond the current year will depend on market activity, and we will be providing our outlook on that in the company's annual release in August 2007. That really was what I wanted to say by way of introducing our results presentation. I'll now pass across to Tom, who will take you through the numbers in detail, and then I will come back and do a more qualitative look at a range of our businesses.
Thank you, Stuart. As you have explained, my intention is to provide some more details behind such a momentous result. The first page, I really wanted to provide some clarification that these numbers that we're talking about are, in the most part, in US dollars, except when we state them in terms of the buyback and the dividend are in Australian dollars, but virtually every number is reported in US dollars. If we turn to page 12, we see the overall profit and loss, which, as Stuart has explained, gets us down to the $0.1786 per share in terms of management EPS. You really see a couple of the drivers there with an 18% growth in revenue and only a 3% growth in operating costs drives an EBITDA increase of almost 90%. A number of times over the past, or a number of times in the next few days, we'll be asked the causes of what's really driven our growth. I came up over the past few days with a top 10, and I'll say it's none of these, it's actually all of these. It's corporate actions, it's interest rates, it's margin income balances, it's new clients, it's acquisitions, it's divestments of underperforming businesses, it's synergies from Equiserve, it's cost control, it's operating efficiencies, and it's even balance sheet efficiencies. As I said, it's all of those top 10 reasons. Page 13 shows our revenue splits, which are broadly the same as previous periods, perhaps a little bit higher in the corporate action space. Page 14 looks at those from a numeric point of view. The most pleasing thing here is obviously the growth in all of those lines, in register maintenance, in corporate actions, in fund services. The only two where we don't show a significant improvement is because of asset sales. We sold the analytics business, which came out of stakeholder relationship management, and we also sold their markets technology business, which comes out of the technology line. The most pleasing thing to me is that all of these lines are working in our favor, not just these revenue lines, but also by country and by region are also working in our favor. The second point is that while we have seen a growth in revenue, it's been a growth in the quality of the revenue as well, in what I'd call profitable revenue, which is why so much more of it has fallen to the bottom line. The third point is you'll see the note here, margin income has risen from $52 million to $84 million in the half. Yes, it's increased, but these increases are clearly not just a margin income story. That's part of the story, but it's certainly not all of the story. Page 15 really explains the difference between the IFRS net profit number of $119 million and what we call a management adjusted profit of $107 million. We believe the $107 million gives a better representation of the company's performance over the last six months. It's the number that we in management use, and it's also the number the board uses to assess our performance. We've excluded those items as listed there, just as we have excluded in the last two reporting periods for items similar to that. Page 16 shows the growth in earnings over the past couple of years. 2 years ago, we spoke of a long-term target. Important to note that it was a management target, it wasn't long-term guidance. After greater than 40% growth in earnings last year, and as Stuart has explained, 50% expected this year, we'll be obviously well ahead of our internal target. We'll in fact have compound annual growth rate over the past 2 years of over 45%, well ahead of our 20% internal target. Next page 17 shows our EPS performance over the past 3 to 4 years. After 5 years of greater than 20% EPS growth in the pre-IFRS world, we're now headed, as I said, for 2 years at 45% CAGR in post-IFRS, since IFRS implementation. Page 18 shows the dramatic increase in EPS over the past couple of years. As Stuart has explained, 102% growth versus the prior corresponding period, $0.1786 against $0.0882, which was the first half '06 number. Page 19 shows the revenue and EBITDA growth over the past few years and really demonstrates the margin growth that Stuart mentioned in his introduction. I like to show that, I like to see that the gap between the red line and the blue bar on the right-hand side is almost like our margin gap. It's provided us with obviously great revenue growth over the past few years, but what I'd call spectacular EBITDA growth, demonstrating the leverage that is inherent in this business. And if you look at those bars and the line, and you look at the gaps between each of those, you'll see that the revenue has grown between halves by 29%, 29%, 7% and 11%, while at the same time EBITDA has grown by 42%, 7%, 41% and 34%. As I said, really demonstrating the leverage that is now apparent in our business. Page 20 shows the half-on-half position. And as I said, the growth is even more remarkable when we look at those half-on-half pictures. Traditionally, we've had lower margins in the first half. So in the first half in 05, our margin was 18%, and in the first half of 06, it was 17%. In the second half, we've had 21%, 20% and 22%. But as I said, this is really providing the showing the leverage that is inherent. Our first half 07 number at 27%, as Stuart explained. Page 21 shows the breakdown between the various different regions in which we operate. And I think the big story here is the European result, particularly in the UK. Europe continuing the correction from the first half. It's important to remember that the first half of last year, Europe was only 9% of profits. We're now seeing that they are 21% of profits. That's a massive turnaround. And as I said, mostly has come from the UK. Obviously the biggest impact from there. Page 22 provides more evidence of the across-the-board improvement with an additional $16 million of EBITDA from Asia-Pacific, an additional $31 million from Europe, Middle East and Africa, and an additional $41 million from North America. Unfortunately, as the head of tax for Computershare tells me, when we make this much more money, we unfortunately have to pay more tax. Which is why there's an additional $29 million of tax in the half. One of the pleasing things is that the amount of cash generated limited the additional interest number that we're paying to only $3.6 million, even though interest rates were up significantly across the year. Page 23 shows really one of the most important stories of this result. While revenue has been increasing at 18%, costs are in the low single digits across the last three halves. What this really shows is cost control, it shows operating efficiency, and it also shows that lots of hard work delivers a great result. Page 24 shows our technology cost performance over the past couple of years. As business has grown rapidly over the last few years, we've tended to more to focus rather than on the dollars we're spending on technology to a percentage of revenue. Equiserve synergies are obviously driving this number down. The increase in first half 06 was really due to Equiserve additional technology costs. As those come out, you can see that in the past half, that number's come down to 9% of total revenues. Page 25 shows where we're spending that technology dollar. Maintenance has really decreased, as I said, mainly because of the Equiserve synergies. Some of those maintenance dollars have gone into infrastructure as we've invested more heavily there to further improve our operating efficiencies. And you'll see that we've spent in the past 6 months over $20 million on development costs, which we term as they're of a capital nature, even though we continue to expense those costs. Page 26 and 27 are probably my two favourite slides, which is no surprise to anybody who knows me. They're about cash. And you'll see that we've grown the operating cash flows by 109% from the first half of 06 through revenue gains, through cost control, through the efficiencies that I've spoken of, through CapEx control and through a focus on working capital. When you do all of those five things, you get the results that we're seeing on page 26. Page 27 shows the free cash flow, and I think in days of complicated accounting standards, cash is even more important, if it can be even more important than it was. And you'll see there that our free cash flow is up 153% on the first half of 06. A couple of points on the balance sheet on page 28. When you see that we've grown total assets by 4%, we've cut total liabilities by 6%, there's a compound impact on that. And what that impact is that we've grown total equity by 16% in 6 months, which we believe is an outstanding result. Page 29 sees our borrowings position, and you can see that we're less than one times management EBITDA, which is really the measure that we use to assess our leverage, slightly less than one times EBITDA. That's come down in the last 18 months from 2.5 times in June 05. It was around 2.3 times in December 05, 1.7 times in June 06, and as I said, less than one times in December 06. Part of that is driven by our capital expenditure performance on page 30. You can see that for the last two halves, we've spent much less than depreciation. I can commit that that won't always be the case. There will be times at which we'll spend more than depreciation. But for the past couple of halves, you can see it's well below that number. Page 31 is a demonstration of much more hard work. Billing efficiency, which is all about getting the bills out the door, and collection efficiency, which is getting the money in. As my team knows, I use the term free money, and I think this has been an extraordinary performance by the teams all around the world, not just the finance team but also the relationship teams, to bring that number down significantly from where it has been. Page 32 shows our improvements in returns on invested capital. There was a dip in 05 which was partly IFRS related but also partly Equiserve related, and what we're seeing now is the Equiserve dip really paying off into 07. It's also pleasing to see that the cost of capital has not increased even in the days of higher interest rates. We've kept that control. Page 33 shows the return on equity and return on assets continuing the climb of recent years. Return on equity over 23% on an annualised basis, and return on assets well over 13% again on an annualised basis. Page 34 shows our interest rate sensitivity. We adjust as leverage to the interest rate cycle in the US, in Canada and the UK. Previously we used to say that for every 25 basis point move either up or down in those three interest rates was $4.5 million Australian. Now we say it's $3.25 million US. It's basically the same number, it's just we've converted into US dollars. And still for 25 basis point increase or decrease in those rates, it'll be, as I said, $3.25 million US, Canada and the UK. As Stuart has explained, a interim dividend of 8 cents per share, unfranked, paid and declared in Australian dollars. Page 36, we still have an ordinary share buyback in place. We've acquired just over 1.3 million ordinary shares, an average price of $8.68. And I'll just close with some final remarks. Obviously, strong EPS growth of 102%, and as I said, coming after 5 years of well over 20% compound growth. Free cash flow, I mentioned, up 153%. Record revenues again. Maintained an extremely strong balance sheet, lowering our earnings debt coverage by 42%, or as I said, less than one times EBITDA, and increased the dividend to 8 cents Australian per share. I'm very pleased. We'll pass back to Stuart. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. In the last bit of this presentation, I would like to just run around three issues. One is how we manage the company in its current shape. The second is what we see as being our key priorities. And third, to do a bit of an around the grounds briefly around our different geographical areas and a little bit on technology. Until we acquired Equiserve, we saw our business in three roughly even parts, Europe, Middle East and Africa, Asia Pacific and North America and managed it on that basis. Now that the US is of the order of 50% of our business, that's no longer an appropriate model. So we have dedicated the US management team to the US business and now have Canada managed separately and reporting to me. Canada is, depending on the numbers, the second or the third largest geographical region for us, and certainly warranted that. We've also split up Australia and New Zealand from North Asia, again recognising that there isn't a lot of fundamental connection between those two markets in management terms. And lastly, we have broken Germany out of the old EMEA structure. We have a global executive team that looks at the major strategy issues across the group that consists of Chris Morris, who you will all know as the company's founder and now executive chairman, myself and Tom, Steve Rothblum, who runs the US, and Penny McGlagan, who has run technology in the group for a number of years. As we try and explain what we're doing, there are basically three things, and none of them are, as they say in the classics, rocket science. The first is that we will continue to drive our operations quality and efficiency, and the tools we'll use to do that are measurement and comparison through benchmarking, and to continue to invest in and deploy technology to support our operations. The second focus is on the revenue line, where we have real opportunities that we're seeing delivery on already, but there is still significant potential in to drive better revenue results by dealing with our clients on a more sophisticated basis. And the third, which is one of the true essential characteristics of ComputerShare, we remain interested in acquisitions and other growth opportunities where they can add value to us, where we can add value to them, and where they can enhance returns to ComputerShare shareholders. Geographically, obviously the US is the first place to talk about. At a technology level, the ambitious migration project we embarked on when we acquired Equiserve is now substantially complete. There are literally a handful of clients left, but all of the legacy Equiserve systems will be migrated off by April this year. Client retention remains very strong. We do have significant work left to do to get the operations working with the technology in the most satisfactory and effective way. That was always going to be the case given the speed with which we migrated the technology platforms, and that will be a key focus for us over the next period. Importantly, in the US, the corporate action pipeline is strong and continues to be strong, and we are winning very significant share and doing the largest transactions. Lastly, the Securities and Exchange Commission's reforms to the annual general meeting voting and proxy process in the US, which are generally known now in the market as notice and access, create significant opportunities for us that we're investing in, making sure we get the optimal return for our shareholders. Otherwise, in the US, our fund services business, which basically does proxy solicitation and tabulation for mutual fund reorganisations, continues to win the vast bulk of the work in that space. Our FANS business also is winning new clients, but the delay in client take on and the material parts of the revenue dropping in there is longer than I think any of us would like, which goes with the complexity of some of those exercises. And our communication services business, the old ComputerShare document services business, continues to do very well on executing the huge volumes of work that come from the investor services business in the US, and also continues to work on developing its external revenue pipeline. Moving now on to Canada. Canada has been a very, very good market for us. We are winning more than our share of work in Western Canada. Everyone, I think, hears how strongly the Western Canadian equity markets are running. We're winning very good deal flow in the proxy business, and more generally the corporate actions and reorganisation work in Canada is producing some very satisfactory revenues for us. We continue to look at small acquisitions. We acquired during the course of the last year the transfer agency and shareholder plan business of National Bank, and those acquisitions are bedding down very satisfactorily. As with the U.S., operational efficiencies are a key focus in Canada. The U.K., Russia, Ireland, and South Africa is an important part of the story. The U.K., Tom told the story of the turnaround there, and we have taken very significant shared services costs out. We have a number of satisfactory wins, including the U.K. government's rental bond administration service, which takes off in the next little while. Importantly, we have rationalized a range of our businesses and exited some businesses that weren't performing satisfactorily for us. And just as importantly, we've worked with some clients on some commercially unviable relationships, with the result that the clients have either taken their business elsewhere or have agreed to much more commercially satisfactory fee arrangements. It's also worth mentioning the depository business, interest business into the U.K. The London equity markets are a significant source of funding for a range of countries around the world, and integrating foreign issuer shares into the U.K. clearing and settlement system is something that Computershare has been able to bring something quite special to and designed. We've designed a depository interest product that is working very well for us, and we're winning very significant business. In Russia, we continue to be the center of consolidation in that market. It's a good market for us, it's quite profitable, and importantly, it feeds product into the U.K. depository interest business. As you look at our results, there is a slight step jump as we move to increase our stake to a majority in National Registry Company, which means that we now consolidate their earnings and eliminate minorities after the consolidation rather than equity accounting it. The Irish business, we are seeing good revenue growth in and improving margins, which is very satisfying to those of us who've looked at that over the years. South Africa, frankly, remains a tough market. We are retaining market share, and it will always be a market that is important to us beyond its size because of the international footprint of a number of South African companies. The rest of Europe, in Germany, we're continuing to execute on our consolidation of the AGM space. There are short-term opportunities to push that integrated offering, which includes now a communication services component, and we continue to look at the servicing, the bearer share and corporate action markets. There are also opportunities in Germany and Switzerland. In Asia, the Hong Kong story, I think people know quite well the flurry of IPOs in Hong Kong that continues as we speak. We are also investing there in extending our product range into the plan space. We had a very successful launch of an electronic IPO application service, which has been very, very well received in that market, and we have some very good business development resources there. Our joint venture with Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group continues to perform well in Japan, and we look to build on that relationship. The Indian market has also been very strong, especially in the mutual fund space. And within the PRC, as well as our presence in Hong Kong, we are investing in full-time resources in Beijing and seeking the appropriate business registrations there, which we hope to have in place in the next little while. Lastly, geographically, the home markets of Australia and New Zealand, again, there are very, very good news stories here. We are achieving significantly better margins. We are seeing more rational pricing behaviour in the market, with the obvious flow through to our bottom line from that. We are retaining and winning clients and building our market share, and the corporate action pipeline is strong. Our communication services business, the old CDS business, is also very strong, and plans continues to grow well in the Australian market, but importantly, the Australian business supports our push into the Greater China region. Lastly, I wanted to talk a bit about our technology. We don't, I think, recognise enough sometimes how important the technology behind Computershare is to our growth. We have had some amazing achievements over the last little while with the EIPO service, which I mentioned, dealing systems that now handle remarkably large transaction volumes, especially within the US. With the completion of the Equiserve conversion, the priority now is on the client-facing side of our and the shareholder-facing side of our technology services, and that's where we will continue to invest. Importantly, we have invested as well in our network of data centers around the world with some exciting technologies using a range of the recent developments, and that has been an important investment for us. And to the extent that you see capital expenditure on the technology side in the next 6 to 12 months, that's a space where it's likely to occur. I guess that's it from me, so I will hand back to Darren.
Okay, that's the end of our formal presentation. We'll now move on to question time. Jeremy, if you could push forward the first question for us, please.
Thank you, Darren. The first question comes from Alex Chow from Credit Suisse. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, gentlemen. It's Alex from Credit Suisse. Congratulations on the exceptional results. I've got three questions, actually, if I could, and I'll ask them separately if I can and quickly. Firstly, on the cost line, seems like it's a very strong cost performance. I'm just wondering, in terms of the personal expenses, which were actually down versus PCP, the contribution from Equiserve coming into that line?
In the past, Alex, we've never split out the contribution from any one business to driving a particular cost line. We don't intend to start that now. All I'll say is that Equiserve is not all of the story. As I said before, there are significant cost efficiencies that we're seeing in all of our businesses. And the other thing is the quite significant improvements in cost performance in our UK business was also a significant contributor.
Okay. Maybe then if I still on the cost line, just touching on Stuart's comments about some of the operational efficiencies that potentially can be derived from the US and Canada. Can you maybe just elaborate on where you see those opportunities and then maybe how developed or how far down that path you are?
I think I'd go back to Tom's point on quantification, which is that we haven't provided that sort of granularity historically. There are clearly opportunities, as I say, to get the businesses that we've acquired working better with our technology, and that's the key area where the cost synergies come from, as well as applying some of the techniques and structures that we've developed in other parts of the world into the US, and indeed applying some of the things that we've picked up in the US back into other parts of the world as well.
Okay, and the last question, I guess, is on corporate activity. Obviously, it's been very strong. I guess what we're seeing in terms of the corporate activity post the AGM upgrade in November has been even stronger. I'm just wondering whether the lagged impact into when that materializes in terms of cash receiving. Obviously, there's some lag in between deal settled and cash receipts back to you guys. How long that impact is, I guess, how much of that volume is really going to benefit not just second half 07 but first half 08 potentially as well.
Alex, in the past we've talked about the fact that some of the lag can go up to 2 to 3 years. If you're talking about an M&A type activity that creates an opportunity for a small shareholder program or a post-merger cleanup program, which will come maybe 2 to 3 years after the date. And so you're correct in that it won't just apply to the second half of 07. There will be some carryover into 08 and in some cases even into 09. It's difficult to make broad brush judgments or assumptions based on what the level of M&A is from global statistics, because it's also the type of M&A that works for us. So there might be a cash transaction of one company acquiring another one. There are not many shareholders in the target company. There are no lost holders, etc., etc. And what we'll finish up is that there won't be, and it's a friendly offer, there won't be a significant bump to our profitability. But a very complicated merger, stock and cash, that is hostile, requires some proxy solicitation type work, requires a lot of communications, requires a small shareholder program perhaps afterwards, and, some post-merger cleanup activity 2 or 3 years down the track will provide the exact opposite and will be very healthy for our business. So it's difficult to say that just because the Thompson statistics are up or the FactSet statistics are up, it means that it's good for us. It'll too often depend on the type of activity, whether it's good for us or not.
Okay, thank you.
Gentlemen, the next question comes from Chris Williams from UBS. Go ahead, Chris. Chris, if you've got your phone on listen only, please unmute it now.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Chris. Go ahead.
Thanks. I've got 3 questions as well. Hopefully I won't get as many strikes. Firstly, a question on the guidance. Obviously, there's an element of cyclicality in some of the corporate activity revenue, and I presume that underlines your conservatism. But can you give us a sense on the cost growth, given the 2 consecutive halves of pretty reasonable cost management? I would have thought that your certainty around your cost outcome for this half would be pretty clear. Can you give us some better feel for that?
I think, Chris, if you look at what you've called the conservatism, what we're showing is that the second half is growing around 15% on the second half of last year. Recalling the second half last year was a very healthy second half for us. So I don't know necessarily I'd agree with your comment about we're being conservative. Certainly it's a lot less than the growth that we've seen in the first half, but that's coming off a much lower base in the first half of last year. And unfortunately, to strike you, Chris, we don't generally give guidance on revenue and cost. What we do give guidance on is EPS growth, and I think we've been fairly clear on that the past 5 years.
Okay, strike one. Second question on the capital position, and this has a few elements to it. Firstly, the net debt to EBITDA ratio you've mentioned, but also your gearing at 28% now. Your buyback's been relatively inactive. Your cash generation is strong. Can you give us a sense around where you'd like to see your gearing head and perhaps what sort of opportunities you're looking at, more specifically on capital management as opposed to acquisition, which I know you won't answer, but just some broad comments around your capital position and where you see that developing over the next 6 to 12 months?
Chris, I won't comment on the gearing position. What we've traditionally done is commented on the net debt to EBITDA as what we believe is the most appropriate measure. It's how the banks and other financiers view our position. And I'll just repeat what I've said in the past is that the board has been very comfortable with that number being close to 3. We haven't traditionally been more than 3 times, but we've been getting close to 3 times EBITDA. We're obviously a lot lower than that now, but the board hasn't changed their position on that number. At the moment, the only capital management program that we have in place is the buyback. At this stage, I don't see any more coming to play, certainly in the next 6 months. And yes, we'll continue to look at acquisitions, but you're correct, is we won't be describing what those are or how many we're looking at until we actually announce what the final deal is.
Third question, just quickly, the anomaly for me in the cost line was actually the cost of sales number. Now, I understand that the profitability of some of the corporate activity revenue is very, very good, but just trying to get a sense around how in absolute dollar terms as well as proportionately that has dropped so significantly. Just a little bit of colour on that would be helpful.
It's really mixed as much as anything, Chris. So some of the business that we write will have a higher cost of sales line than other business that we write. This is a number that we've been looking at through the 6 months. As it's been coming out, it's obviously been fairly significantly different from our forecast and our budgets, and particularly against last year. And the best answer I can give you is that it's mixed. It's the type of business that we're writing, it has a lower cost of sales line than some of the business we wrote in the corresponding period last year.
Can you just clarify that which particular types of business?
It's corporate actions, it's mutual fund, proxy solicitation type business. As I said, each deal will come to us and will require us to perform quite different tasks. Some of those have a higher cost of sales line than others.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, the next question comes from David Humphries from Morgan Stanley. Go ahead, David.
Thanks. Good morning, gentlemen. Just back on the guidance, working through the numbers, you're effectively ringing the bell on growth here. If you presume that deliver 50% growth from 06, what you're telling us is that second half earnings are going to be 10% lower than first half. Are we to presume this is just modest, given that there's three things that I'd point to? You've got good growth in recurring business streams. You've got a strong pipeline of corporate actions in the US. And traditionally, there's been a 40-60 bias towards earnings first half, second half. So do we really need to make a huge adjustment for transient influences, or are you just being openly modest?
As Tom said, we don't believe we're being overly modest. Having upgraded now twice, we were very keen to try and avoid a situation where we would need to upgrade again. I think that the question of the cyclicality historically is an interesting one, and it's one that we've done a fair bit on. The important number for us is that the second half of 07 we are forecasting to be significantly higher than the second half of 06, which was a very good result as well, at 15% higher. I do think that the thing that is perhaps being flagged as not as certain as it has been in the past is not the growth, but the cyclicality from half to half.
Okay, so you're happy to stand up and ring the bell that this is we're ex-growth now?
I'm not saying that at all.
Well, that's what your guidance implies.
I don't believe that's right. I'm sorry.
Well, if the second half 07 is going to be lower than the first half 07, then we're earnings are going to shrink, not grow.
I think that you're choosing a half-to-half comparison, and the correlation from half-to-half historically has been reasonably loose, I'd say. And the important number for us is the H206 to H207 number, if you're looking to see where the growth trajectory is, and that's a good solid 15% up.
Okay. It leads me to my second question. In the past, you've said that internally you focus on targeting 20% EPS growth. Is that something that you're comfortable adopting for 08 as an internal target now?
I think we thought very, very carefully about what we said about our growth prospects. We historically haven't provided any sort of indications at the half on what we see the long-term trajectory being. The words we've used are very carefully considered. 20% has, as Tom, I think, emphasised when he was talking, being an internal target, and guidance has been provided in a shorter term horizon, and we're providing guidance in that sort of horizon for the complete financial year 07.
I mean, in terms of what was published in your annual report last October, I recall that comment being made that you'd still target 20% growth long term. Is that something you're happy to stand by?
As a target internally, that is what we are measured on. It's true.
Okay.
But it's clear, David, that that's not guidance.
No, I just wondered whether it's something that you're still striving for.
Yes.
If you have a look, David, at our executive incentive programs, you'll see that 20% is an important number in there.
Yep. In terms of, on a couple of other points, on Equiserve, I mean, 2.5 years ago, you put up a synergy target timeframe. In the past, you've said that the synergies probably aren't going to exceed that target, but the timing of delivery may do. Have we got most of Equiserve synergies in the numbers now, or is 08 going to be marginally better again?
We virtually have them all out of the business now, but some of those were still in the second half number, David, but not a significant number. you could make a safe assumption that they're basically all in the, they're all banked as of now.
Okay. And one last minor point on technology. Can you just talk us through the bias in terms of spend half on half there?
There has been some increases in, as I said, the investment and the infrastructure investment in the second half. In the most recent half. So that's driven the number slightly higher than the corresponding numbers in the second half of 2006. There shouldn't be a significant bias between those two halves. There should be, if you like, an impact from Equiserve where the number went up, and then an impact from Equiserve when the number went down. But the underlying number should be increasing, but as I said, increasing at a lower rate than revenue increases.
Thanks for that.
Gentlemen, the next question comes from John Haggerty from ABN AMRO. Go ahead, John.
Hi, guys. Congratulations again on the results. Just wanted to, first off, if I could just clarify on David's question. Obviously, you've talked previously, just on looking at slide 16, you're talking about sort of 20% compound growth from FY05 to FY10. Would your internal management target still be on a compound growth, 20% per annum from FY05, or even if we do 50% this year, is your management target still for 20% more growth in FY08?
Where people are trying to get to on this is to ask us a question that we explicitly said we're not going to answer until we release our FY07 results. We are being quite explicit about how we expect to do this financial year. We have said that we will be providing guidance on next financial year in our full year results, and I really think that where you're trying to go is behind and inside that question, and we've made a conscious decision consistent with past practice not to do that.
Okay, I was just trying to clarify that a little bit. Okay, just a second question. Could you just get a bit more detail around the, or sort of a bit more colour around the split in corporate actions growth between, say, you know, corporate activity in the US and the UK versus, you know, IPO activity in Hong Kong? I mean, I know it's difficult, but it's just very difficult for us to see exactly what was driving that growth there. Obviously, ITBC came through in the first half. But if that doesn't come through again, do you reckon it would be much more weighted towards US corporate activity?
Yeah, I think, if I understand your question, if we don't have the IPOs coming through in Hong Kong that we've had in the last 6 months, but we continue to have strong M&A activity in the US and the UK, then yes, there will be a weighting towards corporate actions in the US and the UK driving our profit more than Hong Kong does. At the moment, as I said earlier, there's, you know, a number of different items that are driving our profitability, and it's not just one of those. So US and UK corporate actions are a healthy contributor, just as the Hong Kong IPO business being very healthy for us. But if one of those dropped off completely, then yes, there would be a stronger weight to the others.
Can I just amplify one part of that as well? I think people focus on ICBC when they look at Hong Kong corporate activity levels. The truth is that in the last few months of calendar 06, there were significant numbers, well into double figures, of IPOs in Hong Kong with more than 100,000 applications. So the fact that ICBC achieved a very high number, the driver is not reliant on, as Tom said before, on the dollar value size of the transaction. It's driven by the number of transactions at a micro level that we process. And so without another ICBC, we continue to see good corporate action revenues in Hong Kong, so long as the IPO market stays hot. As well, we shouldn't, you know, Canada, the US and the UK have all produced very, very significant corporate action contributions as well. It is really a global portfolio effect in that space, and you know, to the extent that one might weaken and another one might strengthen, we have the protection of that portfolio.
It's just doing some analysis, though, in terms of dollar values, ICBC accounted for half of the IPOs in the second half in the last 6 months. So you'd have thought it'd be quite a large contributor.
But Tom's point before was the important one, which is that the dollar value size of a transaction correlates very, very weakly to its financial impact on us.
Okay, thanks. And just the last question, if I may. Obviously, you've had very good cost growth. So unless sales fall off a cliff, you'd have thought maintaining EBITDA margin around 27% would be possible in the second half. Could I get a comment on that?
Yeah, the comment is that we provided EPS guidance, John. We don't provide margin guidance or cross-line guidance. As Stuart has said, we expect EPS to grow by 50% from the full year of last year.
Okay, thanks.
Gentlemen, the next question comes from Mike Younger from Citigroup. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. Congratulations on the result. It's quite an extraordinary number you've put forward there, gentlemen. A couple of questions that we haven't touched on in the briefing, and I'll probably still get barred if track record's any indication. But firstly, acquisitions. Interested in what sort of areas you would expect to see acquisitions in future come from. And secondly, interest rate sensitivity. I find it difficult to understand how the sensitivity has not changed, because if we look at the average fund balances compared to last year, there's been virtually no change, and yet you've got your margin income up 60%, and so that interest rate sensitivity would not, to me, suggest that it's holding.
Okay, let me answer the acquisitions question and let Tom deal with the interest rate sensitivity question. On acquisitions, we are looking in a range of areas. Really, the things I said when I described them are the things that we apply. Are we going to be good at them? Are we going to add value to them? And are they going to be value accretive for our shareholders? Beyond that, we're not ruling anything out. We are looking at the broadest possible range of opportunities. And honestly, if I steered you down one particular path, and we went and did something different, you'd think I was giving you a bum steer. The truth is that we are looking at a diverse range of opportunities.
And there's no particular area which would seem to be more prospective than another?
Oh, the areas that look prospective today aren't the areas that look prospective 3 months ago, weren't the areas that look prospective 12 months ago. It's a volatile space.
But it's fair to say, Stuart, it's not just in the transfer agency or registry space.
That's right.
So it's not just in that area. Mike might be it's broader than just looking for consolidation opportunities in various markets. And the interest rate sensitivity issue, Mike, the 25 basis points equals $3.25 million doesn't take into account some of the large corporate action balances that we've had for the past 6 months. So you're correct that the balances are higher in the last 6 months than we would expect going forward. But again, that's some of the issue around the type of corporate action that we get. And there were some large actions, large cash actions in the last 6 months that drove the balances up, and in some cases that drove the margin income up, but in some cases it didn't, because as you know, and as we've discussed before, some of those balances we're earning a very small amount on, in some cases a flat spread on those balances.
I might just add one point there as well, which is when I talked about our client-facing people getting better at how they drive the revenue line of the business, a key element of that is to have them more attuned to the opportunities to handle balances and to make money from them. So when Tom refers to better capture of corporate action balances, I think you see some reflection of our investment there.
Thank you.
Fisher from Goldman Sachs, Debbie Weir. Go ahead, Ryan.
Thank you, guys. Most of my questions have already been asked, but one last one on tax. could you possibly indicate to us what sort of the underlying trend is and where it's headed?
One thing goes on with probably the increased amount of profit that we earn in the US and Canada. The rate traditionally has gone up from probably low 20s to high 20s. And the past couple of briefings I've talked about there being an initial drop as we recognised the US tax losses that we didn't recognise 3 years ago. That's happened this period. And I said after that, we'd see a shift into probably the high 20s or perhaps even the low 30 percentage points, and I expect that to continue. So the underlying trend is probably flat, slightly increasing, but a lot of it is driven by the amount of profits we make in as a proportion in the US and Canada, where with rates there closer to 40% rather than 30% that we have in the UK and here in Australia.
Thanks, Tom.
Any more questions, Jeremy?
We have one more gentleman. This is from Diane Family from IAG. Go ahead, Diane.
Thanks. Just wondering, with the days outstanding, you've done a fantastic job there in reducing days. Can that go any further?
Yes, is the simple answer, Diane. We still take too long to bill our clients. It's a hell of a lot better than it was 2 years ago, but there's still room for improvement. And we can still improve the efficiency of collection. If we took the best country in the world at getting the bill out the door and combined them with the best country in the world at getting the cash in after it's been billed, the number is significantly lower than 45 days. So just as Stuart's talked about operational efficiencies and benchmarking those, we're doing the same thing with collection.
Fantastic. And I had another question on the UK, if I could. I'm probably not as up to date on all the deals, but would you be able to comment, given the revenue was so strong in the UK, but comment separately in terms of registry maintenance and corporate activity? And I'd be interested in your thoughts on the registry maintenance side and how sustainable that is.
The registry maintenance side is the most sustainable, predictable slice of our revenue line. In terms of the corporate actions, the major deals are obviously the Standard Life demutualisation, the BAA takeover. We did some work for a buyer on helping clean up its shareholder base as well. They would be the biggest chunks. The truth about this business is that corporate actions do come in chunks, and it's one of the exciting parts of trying to set our own financial performance targets to try and model that where you don't have visibility of it. But the truth is there are always corporate actions that come through even if there's no visibility of them 6 months previously.
And so in the UK with the registry maintenance business, it looks like it's really stepped up a level in terms of your revenue, so that should be sort of a new level going forward, do you think?
The shareholder base has come up significantly with the take-on of Standard Life, with the wins of Unilever and BAT as customers, and as I said, with the commercialisation of some former relationships that weren't as commercially satisfactory previously. Is that sustainable? There is always a risk that a large client gets taken over for cash and a number of the shareholders that we look after disappear. There's equally the risk on the upside that one of our clients takes over someone with a large shareholder base for stock and the numbers go up. As I say, it is the most predictable of our revenue streams.
Thanks for that. And just one last one. Just in terms of the US, and I think on the numbers that grew 6% in terms of the revenue line, can you tell me, what your thoughts on were on sort of, their 6% growth? Was that a little bit less than you were thinking and you've had a really good cost outcome, or is that, pretty well in line with what you were expected?
I think, Diane, what we're really talking about in the US has been the last 12 to 18 months has really been an Equiserve integration focus, and that's really been about getting costs out of the business. We said when we acquired Equiserve that the US teams would really be focused on maximising the efficiencies out of that acquisition, and realistically our revenue growth wouldn't be significant until that was complete. What we're really seeing, with as you said, probably a lower increase there than in most parts of the world, we're really seeing the cost story more so than the revenue story. That's not to say the revenue story won't come back in the US, but it's not surprising when they really have been focused on integrating a very large business into our already existing large business in the US.
That's great. Thanks for your help.
Okay. We'll close it off there. If there's any other questions, obviously you can give me a call direct. Thank you all for your time today. A quick reminder that the audio recording of today's briefing, along with the slide presentation, will be available at www.computershare.com.au/results at approximately 3 p.m. today. Thanks for your time. Goodbye.